Hello, 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 and welcome to 5-Star Potential, a weekly Foot Manager podcast brought to you by WeStream FM. On this week's pod, we'll be talking about how we get ideas for a save and how we keep it interesting. But first of all, I must introduce you all to my co-hosts. Mr. Viking Dan, welcome and back to the pod.
Hello. First this time. Hello.
First, why not? I thought I'd change things up. You know, we are now second year, yeah. So...
keeping me on my toes.
Indeed. If you had toes, it'd be fantastic. Mr. Dave Azzopardi.
Hello and welcome.
Hello and welcome to you too. Mr. Kurt Dizzle.
I have 11 toes.
You have 11 toes.
Marvellous. Normal amount.
An orange.
I guess it's normal for Dan, maybe. We'll move on. And rounding us off is Mr. Joseph. Friday Night FM. Hello, sir.
Hello. It's great to be back.
Yes. Hey. It's great to have that back. Fantastic. Right. You know, some save updates, gentlemen. We'll start off with you, Joe, as I'm intrigued to see if we can get any juicy little, I guess, backroom news from Villarreal before it goes live on the blog.
This is awkward. I haven't played it.
No way.
I have.
Don't disappoint.
I lie. I'm getting to that point where I'm flying through the save and I need to stop, do a bit of writing and, you know, do the catching up kind of bit. Got to the end of the season, finished third again, so no real progress, but it was tight. Definitely could have pushed for the championship, I think, but I concentrated on the Champions League, which we lost to PSG in a semi-final. I won the Copa del Rey again, and now it's really time to put into writing what the 4-2-2-2 is doing, because it is awesome, and I mean properly awesome.
Is that down to the personnel that you've chosen, that it works so well, or is it just that you've got it properly dialed in now?
I think it's more the dialing in, and it's I've got three different variations of it, and that's what is making it really good. And I was talking to someone on Twitter earlier, Dan Gear, and kind of said the inverted wingers on attack are just brilliant. It's that kind of position where we've seen it in other kind of versions of Football Manager where the position makes the player better, if that makes any kind of sense. It doesn't matter who you put there. They just seem to be brilliant if you put them there. I've played Ganso there. I've played wing-backs there. I've played forwards there. I've tried playing different people, and whatever player you put there, they perform. It's really, really good.
Maybe it's one of those positions that leaves quite a lot of interpretation for the player. So it kind of just gives them the... you know, lets them do what they want once they get into the space.
Definitely could be. As I say, it just doesn't seem to matter who plays there. They'll just play brilliantly.
Yeah, it seems similar with a very similar thing with my wide midfielders this year. I've played fullbacks and central midfielders there, and they've all done a good job. Have you managed to register your foreign children?
No, that'll be probably tomorrow night. where I haven't, obviously, I've not updated the blog yet, but I've kind of how I stockpile the next generation of first team players. I've got the first signings, they're already at 2 years, so they've completed the kind of nationalisation. I'm just waiting, it just says awaiting paperwork, so I'm just waiting for them to come through. Lucas Romero's had his, he's now nationalised as Spanish. I just need Lincoln and Benedetto to do it so I can add the other two foreigners that I've got in there to make my 25.
Hopefully that'll come through then. I would imagine if that was my save, I would have been shafted by the paperwork by some way, shape or form, but there you go.
It's normally 2 weeks. After they've kind of done the 760 days, it's normally about 2 weeks after. And because I signed Lincoln and Benedetto towards the end of the transfer window, at the beginning of the save, they should be nationalised by the end. But you know what FM's like.
Hopefully then. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Squeaky bomb time.
Mr. Dan, how are things going at Preston?
Remarkably well. Better than I expected. Before the season started, we were expected to finish mid-table. I was thinking a playoff push might be a really nice way to start the season. Well, sorry, to finish the season is like a bit ahead of predictions and maybe push for promotion the year after. We went 31 games unbeaten in the league. It was insane. We just seemed to be nicking last-minute goals. We seemed to be really solid at the back. playing really well. Unfortunately, we are now 35 games deep. We've actually lost two of our last four games. I'll put that down to a fourth-minute red card and a 2-1 away loss to West Brom. It's kind of shook the boat a little bit. Had a lot of games because we knocked some teams out of the FA Cup. We went out to Everton on penalties. So my team's blowing out their arse. We're getting injuries and we've had a couple of losses. So it's, we're not beyond choking it yet. We are 11 points clear of second place with a game in hand and a massive plus 56 goal difference. But all it takes is a bad run of form. We've got 10 games to play. We'll see.
You always know it's going well when you get called out for cheating as well.
Yeah. First bit of proper YouTube aggro I've had, really.
You've made it then.
Yeah, I've made it. I'm officially on YouTube. Yeah, I've got called out for save scumming, like resaving. So I just said, you do realize I've streamed all this. You can go watch the VODs. No, you must have changed it in the editor then. 1v1 me on FIFA. All right.
Because FIFA settles what? All, obviously.
Well, yeah, that'll prove it.
Genius. But I'm glad things are going well in Preston for you.
Yeah, it's good fun so far. The tactic's been really good. It's been nice to work in a different way. And the team mentality's been good. Like I say, there's been a lot of games where we could have easily drawn or lost and we've nicked a last-minute point or we've nicked a last-minute winner. And to be honest, we pulled it back from 2-0 down against West Brom with 10 men and we were charging through. We nearly got an equaliser in the last minutes. So, it's good club mentality.
Finish the season strong. That's what you need to do.
Well, yeah, hopefully.
Excellent. Mr. Kerr-Dizzle, what's happening at Spurs? I mean, I know things were a bit tetchy last time I watched you, so...
Pretty much the opposite of what's going on with Dan, so... We had a stream yesterday where we played 8 games. I mean, to be fair, we had some tough opponents. We had we played Brighton at home, Fulham at home, Wolves at home. And so not teams that you'd expect Tottenham to beat, really.
Yeah, the big boys.
The big boys, exactly.
Yeah.
And, so we played 8 games on stream, didn't win one. I don't know what's going on. I think I've just got really bad at Football Manager for some reason. In the last few months, I've just got really, really bad at Football Manager. I was saying on stream yesterday, it's been a pretty barren year for me. I've last year I was winning Champions Leagues. I had Champions Leagues coming out my ear rolls. This year, I've won a Europa League. I've won an FA Cup, and that's it. Harry Kane just is averaging 6.4. at the moment, like over the last sort of 8 to 10 games. It came to a point, at one point I tried to release him on a free yesterday and the board blocked it.
Get out, son.
And yeah, and it, I don't know, it was so bad after yesterday's stream, I had about 3 people send me tactics. Like, you're shithousing it when that happens. So, yeah, we're still in a job. Like, Levy hasn't called me in for a chat or anything like that.
That cost him money.
He's a pussycat, really.
He is. So hopefully, when we switch it back on tomorrow, the luck modifier will be in our favour. But yeah, I don't know. The we're going 1-0 up in games, and then gets to the last 15 minutes, and they're just all the players are just look nervous or look very nervous, and then inevitably we concede like a late equaliser. And basically what could go wrong has gone wrong so far. So, fingers crossed we can turn it around, but it's not looking great at the moment.
You only need a few wins to turn the morale around, and then you'll win out the season, probably.
Well, this is the thing. Like, we've been in positions where I'm thinking, okay, right, we'll get this win. Like, we're ahead in a game, and then just literally 87th minute, 88th minute comes around, and we concede a winner. So, you think, okay, maybe fitness is an issue. But Jurgen signed about 18 fitness coaches in pre-season. So you
would have
thought...
Aren't they all dreadful, though?
Eh?
Aren't they all awful, though?
Yeah, they're not good. But you would have thought collectively, like, one of them would come up with a half-decent idea of how to...
run around the block.
Squeeze some fitness. Yeah, exactly. Maybe jog for a bit longer tomorrow.
You all look knackered, lads. Eat a pie.
So, yeah, it's confusing at the moment. I mean, to be fair, yesterday I did flip-flop a little bit with tactics and stuff. And I know that's never a good idea, but
it
was almost like desperate times called for desperate measures.
Libero is never the answer. Neither is Chris Smalling.
To be fair, the libero, when we played the libero, like that tactic, we looked quite good. And we were creating more chances than the opposition. And just generally, you know, playing half-decent football. But we weren't picking up results. And then obviously, like, you know, as sort of Dan touched upon, like, as soon as morale takes a dive, it's so hard to pull it back. But, so fingers crossed, things will be all right tomorrow. Otherwise, I mean, we could be in for another new save. I don't know.
West Ham.
Go West on. Ham.
Hey, again. You didn't let me
love
do that.
To see you in control of my club.
Oh, yeah.
Why not me?
Joe is director of football, I think. Mr.
How
David
many Argentinians?
Pardy. Already stockpiling. Mr. David Pardy, how is Fulham going?
Okay. It's going all right. We started it last week and obviously got through pre-season. Didn't really play anyone major in pre-season. Got what we needed to do, got the wins, but then our actual schedule was very, very difficult, and the fact that it came in massive like clumps of four or five big teams at once. And then we're just going through the same patch now around Christmas. So I thought if we can just keep our job, because obviously I disabled the first window as well, so I didn't sign anyone. We can keep our job till at least January to actually do something with the team. But obviously we started off quite poorly, losing obviously to the big guys, and we were sort of in the relegation zone at this point. And then there was a big clunk of fixtures where really for me they were winnable games, and but one or two games where we conceded late goals, we did what we needed to do. For example, Watford, who were performing well, we smashed them and a couple of other teams. But then around Christmas again, we've got like Chelsea, City, Man United, Arsenal, Spurs all in one go. So we've got a £40 million budget. I've sold off a couple of players that I've not played. So sort of my next stream now will be into January. So hopefully we'll be strengthening the team.
You'll beat Spurs, son. They're rubbish. Just wanted to say a couple of really positive save updates here, aren't they? Absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, we're all doing bits. But
I work for Mets.
Oh, yeah, about that.
Yeah.
Special shout out to Marco Royce, who scored an absolute... is it Royce? Have I got it wrong again? No, Schürrle. I've done that twice now.
Oh, Andre Schürrle.
Andre Schürrle. They look so similar.
Which angle was that? Against Arsenal, was it?
Yeah, against Arsenal, where he took it around like three defenders.
Goal. I wish I recorded that, actually. I'll go back and get that next time.
Get it clipped. I can't remember if I mentioned being sacked by Middlesbrough on last week's pod, but I've been sacked by Middlesbrough. Let's bring it up again.
We did talk about it.
I thought I couldn't remember which day it happened. But yeah, we landed on our feet at West Brom. We finished the season quite strong, actually. We had a bit of a shaky start, but brought in a few players to steady the ship. And we finished in 12th in the end. Middlesbrough only finished in 9th. So we weren't a million miles away from... We kind of bottled it towards the end of the season a bit. We had a few injuries that mounted up against us with a relatively small squad. And we managed to get a last gasp draw against... I think it was Spurs on the final day, which was unexpected. But Middlesbrough didn't get another point for the final three games. So if we'd have won each of those games, which would have been a tough ask, we'd have finished above them, which is a bit galling. But we're close. This season, the pre-season has been very strong. We've recruited quite well. And I'm changing tactics completely. But it's something I've worked on throughout the entirety of pre-season. And in our first league game, we actually won away at Stoke. A Bielsa-inspired 3-3-3-1 system for West Brom, so it's quite a departure from the sort of the ridiculous sort of defensive football we were playing. But it looks good in the match engine, and it does what I'm expecting it to do. So, which is nice.
Your striker Fark looks pretty good.
He's got awful mental attributes. So he's completely uncomposed, but he just in the match engine he's got amazing movement. He looks really good. He went off the boil a little bit, sort of. I think he gets a bit tired. He's 21. He's got a great goal scoring record at international level, but club level, I think we got him from Leipzig. I can't remember. But yeah, and also it's a great surname.
Fucking hell.
You can get the Warnock out every time. So that happens every time he scores, which is one so far. This season. But yeah, we've recruited well. A couple of wonder kids coming through as well, which is always nice to see. But yeah, positive positive way to end this little save update section for a change, and it's for me, which is even bigger change, I guess. But yeah, I don't want to say too much because I know my luck, things will turn to absolute shit in tomorrow's stream, and I'll come back with my cap between my hands, asking for another job from somewhere. So
presumably, the expectations at West Brom are much lower than they were.
Not that much lower, considering we were expected to avoid relegation last season, which we did quite adeptly in the end, finishing mid-table. They've expected mid-table again, although they have backed us financially, which is nice, although the chairman has now pulled out all of his financial backing, so whatever we've got, we have to earn it ourselves, which might prove problematic, but I've been selling players left, right and centre, so I've moved a lot of the players on that I either weren't keen on or didn't impress me last season. Like, so John Joe Shelby, who's now 31, has been moved on for a fairly substantial sum to Middlesbrough as well. Unfortunately, I couldn't insert ridiculous clauses into that contract. But it looks like they, and also in an update on my Middlesbrough sabotage mission, they've also removed all of the release clauses and all of the ridiculous wage increase clauses I put into those contracts, which is a bit gutting, to be honest, because I was hoping that would see them financially implode, but never mind.
The team meeting.
So this week's team meeting is talking about finding a save and then how we keep it interesting and what methods we might use to, first of all, find it, I guess, and make sure that we've got like a personal aim or something built into it that keeps it interesting. For, I know some of us, maybe after 4 years in, you lose a bit of interest in a save or what have you. So sometimes it can be quite difficult to keep that motivation going. And even if it's just a case of looking back on what you've previously done with a save and brought them from absolutely nothing to something. Sometimes we all need a bit of help in making sure that we want to continue with a save rather than dropping it after 6 months. Shout out to Raz. So who wants to start us off with sort of a basic method? We have got a bit of a structure here, so we'll go through it. So one of the ways that I personally find ideas is through sort of reading books and getting ideas from other sources, whether it be real life or from sort of theories or anything like that. But does anyone else sort of share that sort of thing? Do you have any actual examples that we can use to try and maybe suggest to the listening population of ways that they could inspire a save?
I had a plan to do a Nottingham Forest save for a few years now, really, purely out of kind of love for Brian Clough. Obviously, when he was kind of coming to the end of his powers in real life, I was still a young wee whippersnapper, so I didn't really appreciate him when he was around. But looking back and kind of reading some of the books, like The Damned United, and there's a few others, one by Jonathan Wilson, which is really good. The name escapes me now. Nobody ever says thank you, yeah. You know, like the infatuation with Clough has been real for quite a few years now. And obviously there's been films and stuff recently. I Believe in Miracles, which was a really good documentary. The Damn United, the film, which was good. Obviously it's been kind of panned by the Clough family, but still a good film. I've been waiting to do this Nottingham Forest save for absolutely ages, and never really got around to it, and just thought, just going to do it. I didn't, you know, I kind of went with the idea of employing some of the sort of Clough principles, but and we kind of stuck to like a 4-4-2, trying to play sort of relatively attacking football to start with. You know, obviously we deviated away from that throughout the seasons. But yeah, that's my sort of the most recent example of where I've really kind of knuckled down and sort of got an affinity with the club before I've actually taken on the save.
And I think that's the thing. You might change what you do in a save, but when you get into kind of reading a book and you enjoy someone's managerial style, it gives you a basis to start the save. And like you say, you started with his principles of what he wanted to do. Then you kind of, as it becomes your save, you start doing what you want to do. But this kind of topic is really interesting for me because you get a lot of people on Twitter, you see it in the chat, you know, on Twitch, where people are saying, oh, what do you do to start a new save? You know, what's the story behind it? And like Matt said, reading books is often a good way to kind of get yourself invested in a save. I mean, I know Dan, we spoke before about not reading books, but I mean, he read a lot, you know, he's already said on the pod that he read a lot of blogs regarding Bielsa's systems and philosophies and things like that. So just finding something to read is really good. And, you know, before we done this, I wrote a few like Pirates, Punks and Politics for St. Pauli, Working Class Heroes for Rayo Vallecano, my personal one, The Yellow Submarine for Villarreal, Angels with Dirty Faces, brilliant for Argentina, The Gaffer, just for Dave, you know, Neil Warnock, Das Reboot for German football, Behind the Curtain for Eastern, you know, European football. There's lots of different books that you can just pick up and have a read and get yourself kind of into the cultures behind teams and the philosophies behind teams. And it just, it makes you feel invested in the save rather than just clicking load. Oh, I'm just going to pick a team at random and then just go for it.
Yeah, totally agree. Like A few years ago, I read Miracle of Castel de Sangro, which is a great book. Like in terms of footballing discussion, it's fairly basic. It's written by an American guy, Joe McGinnis, who died a couple of years ago. It's a really, really good story. Castel de Sangro, I don't think exists anymore. But me and my missus used to go to this place in Italy called Suave. And right near them is a local football club called San Bonifacese, or AC San Bonifacese. And like I was always sort of tempted to start with them. Unfortunately, they've dropped below the sort of minimum level. I'd have to get an external database. But like, you know, visited their ground, even spoke to a couple of the people in the club, like afterwards, you know, trying to get them to see if they'd send me out a shirt and stuff like that. So that's kind of one that I wanted. And this was even before I was creating content as well. This was just literally for myself. Because I'd read Castel de Sangro, wanted to sort of do a small town Italian club, and yeah, maybe one day we'll get round to that.
It's interesting that you're sort of a book about a single club. Like I read Barca by Graham Hunter, and I was saying before, it took me about three holidays to finally read it, but it actually got me thinking about an FM save and basically using a. It was the first thing that got me thinking about using a club DNA to decide which players to use. And maybe that would be the underpinning philosophy behind it. Not necessarily bringing youth through, but actually just saying, I want to have players that have amazing first touch so I can play this particular like technical style of football or something like that. And I actually started planning it out whilst I was on the coach home so I could actually start it. I don't think I ever started it. It was just an idea that I never went through with in the end. But another thing I've read is The Nowhere Men by Michael Calvin, which is focusing on the scouts and the journey they go on. But that made me think about maybe how I could utilize scouts in the save and maybe using them to control my, effectively use the scouts just to find the players. I can't use the player search or anything like that, which would be quite an interesting save where you're entirely reliant upon your scouting recruitment network rather than a player search. And you just have to use their recommendations. And I kind of have done this this year with Middlesbrough/West Brom, where I found a load of players thanks to those scouts and relying on them heavily rather than just searching for players. But it's always nice getting that sort of influence from something. I wouldn't have expected a book just on like a scout, you know, how scouts work and what they have to do would give me sort of more of an appreciation of that and maybe sort of kindled some flames into my arse to try something in a different save.
Yes, it's interesting you touch on that because I was going to say one of the things that I like to do is almost, it's not really, but like almost role play the save. Like if you're the manager, you act like the manager and you let your recruitment team do the recruiting. You don't, you know, you don't use external sites with Wonder Kid lists and all that kind of stuff. But the thing is, if you do that, if you've got this list of people that become amazing, you're just going to end up going into the same pattern every time. You're going to end up signing the same players, playing a similar way, doing that kind of thing. If you restrict yourself by the capabilities of the staff you've got there and the capabilities of the club, you inherently get more immersed in the club because you know you're a part of it rather than it just being a front to sign all these wonder kids that someone else has found. So like that's one of the things I'd say is try and actually live it, like try and treat it like an actual, you know, you're actually managing a club. And just going back to what Joe was saying about, yeah, I've not specifically sat down and read about certain managers or clubs or things like that, but I've in books. But what I'll do is I'll get an idea of a save that I want to do and then kind of read up on it in preparation. So I'll kind of get ready for it and get immersed in the idea of the save before I actually even start it. I did it with Bielsa and Bilbao this year. Last year I did it with Milan and trying to recreate the Ancelotti tactic when they were, you know, massive in Europe and trying to get them back to the top of Italian football. So almost like a fallen giant thing combined with like trying to bring back a classic style and replicate a classic manager, things like that. I've really enjoyed. And just like, again, going like the fallen giant thing, a team with history. If you can find a team that's maybe fallen on hard times, or try and find a team that's, you know, fallen down the leagues, even if they didn't win that much, if they've just gone from, like, perfect example is the Stockport County save last year. Perennial first division championship team, fell on hard times in non-league football. Perfect. Bit of a rags to riches, getting back to the top of football. And like I say, it's when you do that and you get connected to the team, when you get connected to the club, it's easier to not give up on it.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, you guys spoke about reading books and stuff like that, but similar to what Dan said there, I think for me, it's always sort of been having a long-term goal or a challenge, as every save is really, but I've never really gone out my way to read sort of a book anyway. I've obviously read some little blogs and stuff back in the old days of the sports interactive forums. I know we spoke about some challenges earlier, the Fuge challenge. There was a guy on the SI forums, don't know if he's still about, but I read a blog on there, and he took like a small team from Wales and just absolutely smashed it with them. It was like a 40 season save, to be honest. I think he was still playing it by the time the next game came out, and you know that you just saw the way he grew that Welsh team. He was like, any players that he was selling were going to other Welsh teams, and then as a whole, the Welsh league was just growing and growing and growing and becoming one of the best leagues in the world. And you know, long term, that is a save that everyone really wants to do. And you know, there's so many different challenges, and I know we've touched on like FM challenges before. I think it's sort of the days when Tobes and Duke were here, and those guys weren't too fond of them. But I know obviously Matt's tried it, Curtis tried it, Dan's tried it as well this year. So there's definitely, you know, I think there's definitely interest in there. And I think if people ever do come to struggle, either selecting a team or sort of challenge they want to go down, definitely looking at this list of challenges and giving some a go sometime do get you a little bit more invested, because you know long term what you need to do.
Don't do the Big Sam challenge.
I was just about to say, kind of, you know, Curtis with the director of football challenge, Matt with, obviously, he's done homegrown Hotspurs, you've done the Big Sam challenge. I think there are lots of challenges out there. And when you get to this kind of time of the game where it's, you've probably had a couple of saves, you want to try these challenges. And it's just about, you know, pick the right one and just, you know, just have a bit of fun with it. But I know we'll probably stick on a bit of challenges, but I was going to say visually as well can stimulate you to get into a game. I used to always, whenever I was watching football, I'd watch a game and be like, oh, I want to manage them next. But I've just watched the All or Nothing series on Man City. Instantly finished the eighth episode of that, want to do a Man City save, purely just to emulate Pep, you know. And it's, you watch these things and you see what's going on behind the scenes, and you're just like, I want to manage that team. I've got no affinity to Manchester City whatsoever, but I've just watched a documentary or a docu-series on Manchester City, and now I want to, you know, take control of that club.
So I guess, like, we're touching on sort of managerial styles now, and I know we've sort of briefed, and probably tactical as well, because that they both come under, like, sort of Dan's mentioned about managerial replications and things like that, and Joe's just mentioning the same about Pep there. I think there's always a different sort of kind of challenge, really. It's particularly like maybe if you pick a club that is the complete antithesis of what that manager does. So, for example, trying to instill Pep's philosophy into something like West Brom, who are known for Pulis ball, and or Stoke, for example. So there are, you know,
Stoke,
I guess
the wellness on.
It works so well for them. But like doing something like that might actually do. I know, Dan, you've done similar things and just decided on, you know, you tried to replicate a team within like a former manager of that team's style. But has anyone sort of taken a team that is not used to playing that style and tried to basically slam it on top of it and just see if they can get it to work?
I did slightly with Sao Paulo. I wanted to try and replicate like the old Brazilian teams that had Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, Rivaldo. So playing like the 5-3-2 or the 5-2-3-5-2 or whatever it was. You kind of taking players that weren't really designed for that system, and then you try and build that squad into what I was calling the Jogo Benito tactic at the time. But it was very much taking a team that everybody idolised and trying to then build that philosophy into a club side.
I guess to an extent I did with the Bielsa thing at Bilbao, known as, you know, pretty brutish side in La Liga, but not a, I don't know, they didn't seem to have the players to do what I wanted straight away. I had to retrain people into positions, get them to learn things and bring in a few different players, but got it working by the end of it. So I kind of did it with that, I guess. But I guess, and just to kind of carry on from that, I guess if you're going to go for a managerial style, it's not always necessarily a tactic. It might just be an ethos. Like, you might want to bring in a similar kind of outlook on football or how you want a team to be run. Like, for me, like, I'll always be massively influenced by Alex Ferguson being a United fan. And I always find myself kind of going down that, more often than not, going down that same kind of route of, I want to play attacking football. I want to never say die, and I want to give youth a chance. And it's already started to creep into this Preston save, just almost naturally through, like I say, we go into the final whistle, we're going for the points, we're always going for the jugular. There's never a sit back on a draw and try and get a point. We're always going to the last whistle. And I think that's more of a football philosophy, like a footballing outlook for the club, like based on a manager rather than an actual trying to copy a tactic or, you know, trying to play exactly as they did on the pitch.
The Moneyball effect has had quite a big impact as well, I think, hasn't it? You see so many FM players who, you know, refuse to sign players who are over 25 or whatever. They're all, you know, they're all about trying to buy low, sell high, and all that kind of stuff. It's been an interesting I had a sort of Moneyball-esque save a couple of FMs ago with Liverpool. And just, it's kind of taken a page out of Joe's book, really, where every player's got a value. And no matter who they are, no matter how attached to a player you are, if someone comes in at that price point, then you move them on because you know it's good business.
No, it's something I do quite a lot, to be honest. I've done it at Borough and I've done it at West Brom, and I've pretty much every other save, like trying to basically sell on who I can, but it doesn't matter if they're good enough for the job, even if they're a bit older. I don't mind signing them. Like the whole Brian Clough thing about when he was at Derby, he signed Dave fucking Mackay, to steady the ship. He may have been 35, his legs may have been gone, but he had a good head for football, and he had a lot of young kids that needed to be sort of brought through, I guess, and that's what he did to steady the ship. And I tried to bring that through. But you're mentioning Moneyball. I can't believe we've gone through a chat about football books and we haven't yet mentioned inverting the pyramid. I guess it's maybe a bingo word for discussions like this. But it's probably the most read sort of tactical-minded book by Jonathan Wilson. He's not going to listen to this. It doesn't matter. But it's a fantastic read. There is a new edition out of it, and I don't think I've read the new edition. I'm not sure if any of the others have read the new edition. I think there's a couple of additional chapters. The edition I've got, I think it finishes in 2010. So
I'll download it on my Kindle.
but it's a. I think every year that FM comes out and they release a new version, every time I go and look at the Brazilian box chapter and I think, this year I'm going to do it. This year it's going to happen. And I try it and I think, I don't have the players. I'm trying to do this in the Conference North. This isn't going to work. why can't I have someone like Socrates? Rivellino.
Going back to the Moneyball thing, again, like you say, I think to an extent, I always play that, unless it's a player that is literally, it would completely change how we have to play if we get rid of him. Then everyone does have a price, and we'll always move him on. We'll always have an eye on the player that could come in, or a player in the under-18s that could come in and replace him. So that's the thing that, you know, I've always done. And, you know, I've read quite a lot on Moneyball because I watch a lot of American sports, follow a lot of American sports. And obviously it's a big thing over there with Billy Bean and all that. So I've read up quite a bit on that, and it's something I've always tried to implement myself in. You buy low, you buy young, and you sell at the higher price. But I'm not averse to bringing in an old head. So, like, for a perfect example is the last season, the Milan save. I think I brought in a 34-year-old Ian Robin and then a 32-year-old Gylfi Sigurdsson. I don't mind bringing in players that are out of contract or on the cheap that are 32, 33, 34. Get a year or two out of them as a tutor and an experienced head that you can bring on. As long as you're also bringing through those 18, 19-year-olds that are going to be, you know, the next generation moving on.
Has anyone ever read Calcio, like the history of Italian football? That's a really good read. And that's an interesting one, actually, because so many people want to try and play attacking football, but it'd be interesting to go with like a proper sort of Catenaccio-style setup and see if you can shit-house your way to success.
It's hard this year because you can't defend.
Well, yeah, there is that.
You can try to employ the door bolt as much as you like. Look at that.
The horse has bolted some.
Probably has. So just to round this off then, we've covered over a number of different things. Like we've sort of covered a few of the challenges that you can do, the Sir Alex Ferguson challenge. We won't mention the challenges that Curtis attempted because it might bring bad things to light.
To be fair, I can't blame the challenge for what's going on at Tottenham. That's totally on me.
That's on you. I mean, at least you've admitted it. But what I was gonna ask is, I know Joe does this to a certain extent, about setting your own rules and working within them. Because obviously, a challenge, they are imposed upon you depending on who set the challenge and what those rules are. But if you are doing a challenge currently or have done a challenge, have you imposed additional rules on yourself, or are there rules that you always employ, regardless of what the save is? It doesn't matter. That is what you do. That is the way you play the game. Is there anything that sort of that entrenched in you that you will not deviate from it?
I'll kind of always look to youth first. It's just something I've always naturally done. So I guess I always try and have having a small older squad. So like 23 plus, I'll try and have less than like 20 or less in the first team. And then have teenagers and youth players making up the rest when they need to come in and back up. So maybe that. And there's something that I kind of want to do with the Preston save, but considering how quickly we might be going up to the Premier League, I might have to ditch. Preston already have a completely homegrown squad in terms of England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. And I kind of wanted to keep that going, but we need some serious investment if we're going to go up. And I don't think I'm going to be able to do it with English players because they all cost many, many pennies.
I'm always quite strict on contracts. Obviously, it's dependent on which level of club you're at. But like for Villarreal, for instance, I've literally gone 75 grand a week. That's my limit. No one is getting paid more than that until I get to a point where maybe we've got to a final of a Champions League, maybe we've won the league. I might step it up a bit, but it'll be 75 grand. And I've literally got my captain at the moment who wants 140 grand a week. I'm like, no, 75 grand a week. But I'll put a clause in there that you match the highest earner. Nope, still not interested. So now he's pissed off with me because I won't go above 75 grand. But it's kind of just one of those self-imposed rules that's what I've set it at. So actually, I'm going to keep bargaining you. And I'll mess around with appearance fees and things like that. But his actual weekly wage will not go above £75,000 a week.
Doing a Daniel Levy.
See, I do a similar thing, but with players' ages, generally I tend to look about shipping them on once they hit about 31, 32, unless I can't avoid it. Like, there are some players that gets bent for slightly if they haven't started declining. Once I start seeing those downward arrows, and I've got Jan Via at West Brom, and he's lost 2 points of pace and acceleration in half a season, I know his goose is pretty much cooked. So rather than buying just the one player I'd originally planned to sort of work as an understudy for a season, and then when his contract runs out, I'll release him and then bring another one in, I've ended up signing two because I feel like his legs are going to fall off before we get through to the end of this season. But that's one of those sort of self-imposed rules that it's just the way I've always tended to play. As Dan has suggested, sort of focusing on youth tends to be the way I play, but I do like having a few of the sort of more experienced players as long as they are good enough. But I also want to maximise how much I sell players on for. Like Shelby was a prime example. West Brom spent a lot of money on him in the first place, but I sold him for his value at 31, and he was on a massive contract, so he had to go, really.
I always remember I used to run a thing of when a player hits 27, it's like, right, if I'm getting a good bid for you, you're going. It's like, I know you're in, they're at the peak, but the like a peak player at 27 is going to bring in, you know, in this this game, maybe 150 million. How many young teenage talents could I bring in for that that could build the club, well, grow, move the club forward and be another 550 million pound players in another 7 or 8 years? It's I'm not at that strict anymore. Like, I'll keep players around as long as they're playing well. And like I say, I'm not afraid of signing an old head. But yeah, I remember doing that. Like, I'd only play players that were kind of between 18 and 26.
Perfect. Well, hopefully we've given you some reasons and ideas as to how, maybe why, you can or want to sort of start safe if you're looking for one last hurrah before your time on FM 18 finishes. Or maybe you're looking to change, but maybe you've convinced yourself to stay and motivate you to carry on in a save that you thought was maybe dead. But now it's time for a couple of your questions. Okay, we've only got time for one question this week, but it's a goodie. So, Ted Redwood FM. It's at Ted Red Gaming. That's not confusing at all, Ted. Thank you
for
that.
It's a mouthful.
It is, yeah, that's what she said. What has been your favourite save on either YouTube or Twitch? He's also said, thank you for the solid work. Thank you for the compliment, Ted. So, who wants to say? We'll say outside of ourselves, because obviously we may well, you know, want to self-flash, but not today, Zerg. So, Kurt Dizzle, start us off.
My favourite YouTube save was the one that wanted. Sort of made me want to start creating content, which was Palmer Drama by friend of the pod, Dr. Benji. It's an absolutely tremendous YouTube series. If you've not watched it, even though it's, what is it, FM?
It's FM 15, 16? Isn't it?
14 or 15, yeah.
15, maybe? It's well worth going back and having a watch. It's a great story. Great example of storytelling on the internet.
Agreed. That is absolutely one of my favourites. I think I've watched it through 3 times, which, think how I think there's, what, 101 episodes, because he's done a couple of the special bits as well. So that's pretty special. This year I've not really watched an awful lot, if I'm honest. I haven't really had much time in between trying to change jobs and doing my own streams to actually consume any form of content from anyone, really. Other, you know, outside of ourselves, really, I've not really watched a huge amount. There's been a few streams that I've tried to join in on and actually participate in, but they tend to be ours because I enjoy our content a lot. So this wasn't supposed to be a self-flash session, but I've turned into one.
For me, like, even when I started content creation, I've never actually watched a series from start to finish. Obviously, every now and then, I haven't watched any YouTube for a long time, to be honest. But obviously, with the Twitch stuff, I watch, as Matt says, all of our guys. But the only 2 series really that I've watched a lot of was Curty when you did your Arsenal save. Was that last year, I think, FM 17?
17, beta.
Yeah. So I think I watched that from start to finish. I watched a lot of all the shots save. But when I was doing the 1860 save, I watched FM Scribe. I can't remember what he was called back then. Dare FM, that was it. I think it was Dare Rise. So obviously it was like a journeyman save, but in Germany. So I watched that quite a lot, and I enjoyed that, to be fair.
That's a good shout. He's had two in 2 weeks as Matthias.
Lovely.
Paying us soon.
I think for me, anything that's got Proud in it is just hilarious to watch.
Agreed.
Bloke's an absolute nightmare. probably, I mean, I'm liking every day I'm trying to get a little dig on Twitter now. I suppose, yeah, Golden FM. I watched a couple of his kind of before I got into watching streams, I think. Probably watched a couple of his, and obviously Tobes Fergie Way was brilliant as well.
Yeah.
Historically, second yellow card. Great YouTube stuff. His stuff in Denmark with Michelin was really good. I've not watched tons and tons of YouTube stuff, but I did enjoy The journeyman save, Loki's journeyman last year. I got sucked into that and ended up just watching the daily episodes just out of habit almost, but it was compelling and like good storytelling at the end of the day. But this year, I really enjoyed like a bit of selfish, but Unarming Pine. I really enjoyed his Chester save. Even though he didn't get to the Premier League, I thought that was a really fun save. And I think we've got to give a shout out to Foxy, Fox in the Box as well, for his Casapia 25-year, however long it's been, save.
It's a slog.
Yeah, an absolute slog.
And it's a proper slog.
Yeah, and one of the most, just the depth that he goes into and continuously on it is really impressive. Unfortunately, not watched as much of it as I'd like because we tend to stream at similar times, but when I have caught it, it's been really impressive.
Marvellous stuff, yeah. I pretty much agree with all of those, so... well done, everyone, for creating great content.
Yeah. Bravo.
Excellent. Right.
And there's tons that hasn't been mentioned as well.
I'm sure there is. We're just too busy / lazy to look for it. But I'm sure if you search for Football Manager on YouTube / Twitch, you'll find something decent to watch at any time of day. Brilliant. Right. You can obviously ask your questions at us by adding us at 5-star pod or by joining the WeStream FM Discord server and asking us in the dedicated 5-star potential section, the links of which will be in the description of this very podcast. But now it is time for arguably everyone's favourite part of the podcast. Quiz Curti. I am in the Quiz Master's chair this week, which is a bit bizarre. This is the first time I've actually sat in this very chair. I'm normally hosting duties, so you might have to listen to me for quite a while, which is obviously going to go ever so well if I can't even put my words straight. So I've not done the quiz speech before, so I might get it wrong, but the usual rules do apply. The Viking Dam rule is in effect. You all have to answer, and you answer with your names fastest finger / voice first. Is that it? Is that about right? Have I got that right, Curti? I
mean, brilliant. Top notch.
Perfect.
11 out of 10.
11 out of 10. Yes! I'm winning. Right, okay. We'll start with question number one. But first, I will tell you what the theme is. It's players who failed to live up to expectation. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have had to be in a flop and cost shitloads of money, but it's players that have failed to live up to expectation. Because we've all had those players that you've signed with massive promise and expected lows, whether it be an inflated transfer fee or just really high star potential stars from the scout report, and then for whatever reason they never work out for you. So this is to you bunch of shit fucks. Okay, so we will start now with question number one. Are your buzzers ready, gents? Do you need to test them first?
Yes, Dad.
Butch.
Dad, brilliant.
Butch,
that's Dan. Okay, so signed for nearly £6 million and on £20,000 per week. But whose form for Dynamo Zagreb convinced John Gregory to sign them for Aston Villa?
Kurt Dog.
Kurt
Milosevic.
Minus one. Did you want clues?
Hey. Okay.
Can you repeat the question?
I can. Yeah. Signed for nearly £6 million
on Google.
Signed for nearly £6 million on a £20,000 per week contract. Whose form for Dynamo Zagreb convinced John Gregory to sign them for Aston Villa?
What's the first question always so bloody hard? I think I know. So Bosco Balaban?
Is right. Congratulations, Joseph.
Wow.
That
I've never got that.
He played 9 times, scoring no goals.
I'm going to get my phone.
Legend. you're ringing Bosco. How many did you score?
Question number two. Costing a reported £9 million from Brescia back in 2009, he only managed to start once in the same season.
Dan?
Taibbi? No. That's way too late for Taibbi. Minus one for Dan.
Brescia.
We were only like halfway through the question. I was waiting for the rest of the question.
You didn't give us a year or anything.
I did.
How was it too late?
Back in 2009. I did say that. That's in the first line of the question, Dan. Is
signed
that thing
for or from?
Paying attention.
That might be your problem, why you're so crap at these quizzes.
I don't have a clue.
Okay. 9, son.
costing a reported £9 million from Brescia back in 2009.
By the way, I know, I've just Googled it. So.
Oh, Kurt Dizzle.
It's going to be boring if you have a lot of Googling it.
I mean, Kurt, he's just, he's on minus Joe? Two now. Joe?
Is it Bianchi?
No.
I can't be on minus two. If someone gets it before me.
You answered the first question incorrectly.
Yeah.
And you just Googled the second
and then you just Googled the second minus question.
But if someone, but I haven't offered an answer yet. If someone gets it without me offering an answer, why should I get
it? I'm the only one left.
You've got to answer anyway, and now you know it's going to be right.
Yeah, but if someone gets it.
No.
I don't, I'm going to pass, I don't have a clue.
Dan, it's on you.
I already got it wrong.
Dan already went.
Oh, no, it is.
I already got it wrong.
What's his name?
You've already got it wrong, so that's it then. That's it. Everyone's answered. It's Savio. Nzreko, or Nzreko.
I've never heard of any of these players.
It was West Ham, wasn't it?
Yeah,
West Ham. It was West Ham, yeah.
That's why I put it in for Joe as well. That's why I couldn't say West Ham, because Joe would have got it straight away. That's so... Okay, number three. This one's a bit easier, I think.
Okay.
I had to put this one in because I did have to. Right, so question number three. We're on question number three. Joe's was done by now. Jesus Christ. Corrado Grabbi became one of Blackburn's record signings for a fee of £6.75 million. Despite a relatively high fee 17 years ago, he managed only 2 goals in 30 games over a 3-year period. But who was he signed from?
Pass. Fucking hell. You put Rain Man in charge of the quiz.
Kurt Dog. Chizena.
It's a good guess, but it's not right.
Dave.
Go on.
Again, I don't know. Chieva.
Good guess, but not right.
It wasn't Juventus, was it?
No. He did play for Juve, but it wasn't from Juve. Tanana. Tanana is the...
Tanana.
Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Obvious.
Last quiz this.
1 point's going to win it this week. Minus two might win it.
That's at the US Open.
Okay. Yeah. Question number four. It's not often you see many South Americans feature in the SPL, but in 1999, Celtic parted with a reported £5 million for the services of Raphael Schaidt, who went on to make a mere 3 appearances in the league before his contract was cancelled. But which club did they sign him from?
Was he Schaidt?
He was. Schaidt by name, Schaidt by nature.
South American.
Yeah.
Can you name a country?
Grêmio. Oh, sorry, Joe.
Joe's got it.
Grêmio.
Yeah.
Okay. He's a Phil Vickery special.
He's a Phil Vickery. I had to put it in. There was two that I had to choose that one of one or two. So well done, Joe. But yeah, he is a Brazilian, Kurt Dizzle, to answer your question.
Well, I know that now.
Yeah. Right, Dan.
Thank you.
Question number five. Signed from French club Lyon for £11.5 million, Steve Marley performed so poorly that it caused the chairman to try to sue the manager for signing him in the first place. But what was the name of that manager?
Never heard of him.
Curti.
Go on.
What's his fucking name?
That's the question.
Jean Tigana.
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent work. Great work.
GG.
If I'd have given you Fulham, you'd have got it. So I had to make you work.
Would
have. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent work, Kurt Dizzle. Okay. Question number six. After joining from Parma, much was expected of then Swedish star Thomas Brolin. But which Premier League club did he join?
Kurt Dogg.
That's Kurt Dizzle.
Crystal Palace.
Is correct.
Yes.
I was about to say Leeds, to be honest.
Yeah, see, 1998, but he joined Leeds in 1995. It was a
fucking, that was good.
It was a Curti special, but he beat me. Okay, question number seven. Juan Sebastian Ferron had a tough start to life in the Premier League, but who did Chelsea loan him out to when Jose Mourinho took charge at Stamford Bridge for the first time?
Dan?
Dave.
Dan.
Is it Boca?
Nope.
Dave? Again, I don't know. Juve?
Nope.
Joe? Inter Milan?
Yep.
Oh, I knew it was one of the Italians.
Yeah, I was thinking it was Lazio or Inter. I couldn't remember.
Okay. Question number eight. When Manchester City were purchased by the Abu Dhabi Group in 2008, they moved quickly to try and buy up young, prodigious talents. Brazilian
Kurti.
Kurt Dizzle?
Fuck. Rubinho.
Minus one. Brazilian forward Joe was one that failed to live up to that initial promise. But which club did City pay £18 million to for his services?
Dave. Flamengo?
Minus one.
I was going to say that.
Joe? CSK Moscow?
Yeah. Congratulations.
I knew the fucking answer as well.
I had to get you with one.
We was playing. We was playing Football Manager the same time as Sven. It was fine.
Question number nine: Robbie Keane joined Inter Milan from Coventry, but unfortunately, he failed to live up to the expectations of Marcello Lippi and was moved out on loan back to England 6 months later. But how old was Robbie Keane when he initially signed for the Italian club? Kurt Dizzle.
18.
Minus one.
Dan. 19.
Correct.
Oh, fuck off.
And the ever-important question number 10. Liverpool made a bit of a habit of making questionable signings over the past 10 years, but which North Eastern-born player failed to impress... Dave?
Andy Carroll.
Minus one.
Fuck knows.
Do you want to finish the question?
I will. I'm just finding my place. But which northeastern-born player failed to impress the Anfield crowd only to join West Ham 2 years later?
Can you read the question again?
Liverpool made a bit of a habit of making questionable signings over the past 10 years, but which northeastern-born player failed to impress the Anfield crowd only to join West Ham 2 years later?
I'll take a punt. Oh, no, not Liverpool. Fuck.
You've buzzed in IMO.
You're damn right I did.
Is Joe on minus one?
Yeah. It's going to have to be, yeah. It's gone.
So, not Carroll? Surely it's Carroll.
Curti?
Kurt Dizzle.
Paul Konchesky?
Minus one.
Oh, that's a good shout, now.
Dan. It's on you, son.
Going down.
I've no fucking idea. I'd have said Carroll. Yeah, I'll pass.
Stuart Downing.
Oh, that's why I didn't remember.
See, I knew someone would go in with Andy Carroll, but that is Stuart Downing.
Fabio Capello said that Stuart Downing was England's most technically gifted player.
Most technically gifted player.
That's why he was such a success in the England job.
Did you want to hear the tiebreaker? I did put one down.
I don't know, it might make me want to kill myself.
Okay, this is quite a tough one. So.
Ask that question quick.
Okay. Jesus Christ. Right, okay, the tiebreaker then is, for no points, just for funds, shits and giggles, is Brad Friedel had a poor start to life in England, failing to display Sander Westerveld and David James as Liverpool's number one, but which manager ended up signing him twice throughout his career?
Joe? Mark Hughes?
No.
It's a shout. Just trying to think who's Blackburn manager or someone.
No.
I don't have a clue.
I can only think of one other. Wider boy?
Hodgson. No.
Hodgson.
I don't have a clue.
No clues?
No.
Graeme Souness. He signed him for Galatasaray in 1995 and then signed him for Blackburn.
Fucking hell.
Been a great quiz.
if you want tough answers, that was the quiz.
The scores on said doors, bringing up the bottom is Daniel.
Doing what?
Bringing up the bottom is Daniel.
What if you pay extra?
Minus five. Give him a round of applause.
A new low score. New low highest score. Low score.
That's still record. Dave's. No, that's still Dave's, oh. I think.
What did I get?
Minus 100 or something.
Brilliant.
Joint second, both on minus four, is Kurt Dizzle and Dave. Congratulations. And winning
on par
with a single point.
Said it. I can't finish
on positive.
He finished on positive.
Come on.
Positive.
One, 1 point, wasn't it?
Joseph.
It's amazing what Google can do these days.
Congratulations, Joseph.
Yeah, I got questions wrong, Dave.
Hey.
Putting forward a future rule, if you admit to Googling, you get minus 10 points.
But yeah, that's the end of said quiz. I apologise profusely, but hey, it's what the crowd
Great
wanted.
Effort, mate.
I tried to make it.
It was good. It was just hard.
I enjoyed that. Enjoyed that, Matt.
I enjoyed the knowledge, just the frustration.
Dave, I should have apologised to Dave before we started. I did put some questions in that were after you were born.
I think 90% of that quiz was before I was born.
Some of them were.
Read a fucking book.
Have a life.
I was going to go for Luther Blissett as one of them, but because I wanted to have a bit more of an international vibe, but never mind. Anyway, plugs please, gentlemen. Dave Azzopardi, where can people find you?
Dave Azzopardi on YouTube and Twitter, and Dave Azzopardi FM on Twitch.
Perfect. Kurt Dizzle?
Kurt FM, everywhere you go.
Marvellous. Joseph?
FridayNightFM.com and FridayNightFM on Twitter.
Fantastiche. And Daniel?
Finishing off plugs. It's filth. I am VikingDanTV on the Twitter and VikingDan on YouTube and Twitch.
Marvellous. And you can find me at Nerdphonic everywhere. So that does bring episode number 53 to a close. And you can find the links for the Five Star Pod Twitter account, the WeStream FM Discord server, and each of us in the podcast description. The Five Star Potential Podcast is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and most popular podcast apps and platforms, with a new podcast released every Monday at 8 a.m. If you've enjoyed the pod, then please leave us a review on iTunes and drop us a follow on SoundCloud as well whilst you're at it. This has been Five Star Potential, a WeStream FM production, and we'll see you all next week. Say goodbye, folks.
Bye.
Bye, bye.
Goodbye.